Good evening. It is Monday, October the 21st, 2019. October the 21st, 2019. It's approximately 1741 hours, 1741 in military time for the Queensley Navy, for all of the deep space starships fighting for their lives because, you know, pirates get chased across the solar systems and galaxies. It is almost 6 p.m. for those of us in Pacific Standard Time here on planet Earth in Seattle, Washington. It is a nasty, rainy day today. It almost looks like an autumn day in Seattle, and there's this part of me that wants to say, you know what, maybe it's real. Maybe it's not make-believe. Maybe it's not chemically nucleated garbage. But when I walk outside, I don't know. It feels nasty. I just don't know. Separate topic, though. I need to talk about my chest pains. I've been having chest pains. And so you guys know, back in my 30s, I had a whole bunch of chest pains. And I thought I was having heart attacks. And it turned out I was having panic attacks. And so I went to the doctor and I said, "Doctor, you know, what do you think's going on here?" And this wasn't Dr. Grunkus. This was a quote-unquote, you know, whatever, allopathic, regular medicine. Here's a brochure on the latest erectile dysfunction medication. So I went to see my doctor in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee. I think it was 2006. And he told me back in 2006, after he put me on the treadmill and did all of his EKG shit, that no, my heart's fine, everything's fine. I'm having panic attacks. And so he next wanted to put me on Xanax, and I don't know, I may or may not have talked about this in a previous podcast, but my dad was on Xanax the last few years of his life off and on, and I don't know that it really helped him a lot. I think it may have helped him, but it also kind of maybe just turned him into a zombie. I don't know. I have chosen, vis-a-vis my panic attacks, to use a plant called marijuana, and I won't lie, I have not used it with wisdom. I mean, I truly believe the Lord in heaven gave us this plant as a thing to heal ourselves with, and not to take for granted, and not to abuse. And in reality, in the last 10 years, I have abused it. I'm not going to tell you that I'm particularly ashamed of it. There are things and paths I could have gone down that would have been much worse and way more destructive to myself and others. But the fact is, I chose to take something that should have been a short-term crutch, a short-term solution, and yeah, more or less just kept doing it because it helped. That being said, I've had some chest pains recently, and I don't know if they're panic attacks revisited. Could have been some bad weed. There's a lot of bad weed out there, people. The thing is, though, is that I think my diet has been mainly Rainier beer and weed for about 65 days now. So I don't know what to tell you, okay? I may need to reduce my sodium. I have a scheduled appointment, a checkup with Dr. Grunkus next week. Maybe we'll record that session somehow. But yeah, I got a meeting with Dr. Grunkus next week. I don't know. I haven't been exercising. I haven't been taking care of myself. I had a migraine yesterday, and I usually have one of those about once or twice a year. Not that often, typically, but yesterday I had one hit me. It wasn't a bad one. And when I think about all the stuff going on right now, I realize that within a week, I could turn this all around. Like, I could just get off my fucking ass and go for a walk and lift a few weights and actually just turn this around. It's not impossible to do. What it requires is for me to wake up one of these days and really give a shit. I said something to somebody yesterday on the phone because I had a really good phone call. Somebody who may end up being, like I said, a surprise special guest on our podcast, but I told the guy, I said, listen, and I think I've said this in my podcast maybe, but I haven't really been able to pray much. I mean, I wouldn't say I literally haven't prayed in the last 2 months, but I haven't been able to pray the way that I would have prayed maybe 3 or 4 months ago. I haven't been able to say anything to God because, well, a lot of reasons. Number one, shame. I mean, I'm not proud of shirking. The reason why I shirk right now is because I truly do not believe there is any fucking future, for me at least. It's not to say that there isn't a future, but I'm 50 years old, and if you ask me to look into my fucking crystal ball and tell you what do I see in 20 years for Uncle Dan, I don't see post-scarcity economics. I don't see 3D printers in everybody's a-hole. I don't see a crypto economy of magical, spectacular fabulosity. I don't see any of that bullshit. I see labor camps. I see disarray. I see a lot of dirty water and toxic food and air you cannot breathe. That's what I see. Because listen, folks, I grew up in the state of Washington. Okay? I grew up here. So you can tell me all the bullshit you want to about you need to use logic to evaluate the environment. Here's my fucking logic. I grew up here. This place has become a shithole. The water is more toxic. The air is more toxic. The soil is more toxic. We have treated the Puget Sound like we treat every other fucking place on planet Earth. All of us humans. It's not special to America. This is a fucking human trait, folks. This is not me beating up on Americans. And it's not even about capitalism. It's about eating tomorrow's breakfast, eating tomorrow's lunch, eating tomorrow's future. So what if I have fucking chest pains? Here's my question. Why would I give a shit? If you're gonna tell me, well, Dan, don't you think there's something waiting for you? What's waiting for me? You know? And maybe that's what I have to ask God. Like, hey, God, what do you want a middle-aged, burned-out computer programmer to do? You know, what precisely makes sense for that? I don't know. I don't think much of anything. I think at best, special effects. At best, I'm the guy, on day zero, you'll be driving in your car with your family trying to escape the apocalypse, and you'll see some dude on the side of the road just walking along. But the panic ensues. And in the panic, a large truck jumps the curb. You cover your child's eyes, but you and your wife see me as I am smashed up against a wall, my body pulverized into nothing but hamburger meat. But I have a smile on my face. I think I might be a special effect. Like, maybe that's my purpose. My purpose is to be a special effect. Anyways, I am gonna try, because otherwise I'm gonna be an asshole. I'm gonna try to get off my fucking ass this week, start walking, start exercising, start eating better. Cut out the fucking beer, at least as much of it. Maybe reduce it to a Friday thing or something. I should do that. And then, you know, reduce the weed to a normal level. And then maybe do some things that are practical and productive. And that aren't totally, totally examples of what you do when you think you only have, you know, 6 or 7 months to live. I can't lie to you, folks. Part of my darkness right now is that I have this feeling that no matter what I do at this point, the same dark, empty room awaits. And it's true for a lot of people. Not everyone. And it's not special. It's not prophecy. It's not precognition. At best, it is the same type of thing that dogs or cats do before a fucking earthquake. They bark. But it doesn't involve anything fucking magical. And it's also not necessarily foolproof. Because I've had this feeling at least once before, this general sense of dread, and it was 2015. Now, it's possible that I was sensing something that was further in the future, and it was just sort of hitting me. I have a weird belief about that. I believe, and this is not something I can prove scientifically, folks. So I cannot prove this scientifically. This is a belief of mine, a hypothesis that would require testing to prove or disprove. But I do believe that terrible events, horrible events, they have ripples that go backwards and forwards in time, both directions, which means when a terrible event happens, even days after, it isn't just PTSD, it isn't just trauma. There is an actual wave of energy still radiating from that monstrosity. Listen, after 9/11, a lot of people were just knocked into a fucking coma. And it wasn't because they watched too much CNN. A horrible thing happened. Now, who was behind it? Who caused it? Boy, that's its own fucking mystery. Still not yet resolved. Unlikely Osama bin Laden, the diabetic, you know, kidney donation wannabe, was the sole architect of this great enterprise called 9/11, but yeah. I don't know. Anyways, this episode of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Old Style Nally Tamales in South Park, Seattle. Nally Tamales had to split off a sub-business, and it's no longer part of Nally Corporation. Yeah, they had to split off a sub-business from the larger umbrella corporation of Nally's. And so many, many years ago, sometime, like I think it was in 1992, Old Style Nally Tamales in South Park became its own independent tamale manufacturing center. At Old Style Nally Tamales in South Park, Seattle, located next to the Duwamish River, they utilize the fresh waters of the Duwamish to create the brine, the main recipe of their Nally core. Their core stratum, the glumbus that represents what's inside the fucking tamale. Of course, Old Style Nally Tamales of South Park, Seattle, of course, they dredge the Duwamish River for proteins and ancient greases that can be harvested from the bounty of its crystal clear waters. Old Style Nally Tamales in South Park, Seattle is also located not far from Harbor Island, where the old secret naval labs used to be. The ones where they had the experimental nuclear reactors they don't like talking about. Remember, Seattle is lying. There are lots of people out there who make tamales. They claim that they have home-style fresh tamales. But the kinds of meats and proteins and greases, the types of materials you'll find in a old-style Nally tamale manufactured in South Park, Seattle, it is a spectacular surprise. At any Chevron station, you can find these old-style tamales now. Go into any Chevron station or AM/PM. Or even 7-Eleven. Go to your local 7-Eleven and you'll see a can. The label on the can will read, Old Style Nally Tamales. Underneath that it'll say South Park, Seattle. Check out the ingredients, my friend. It'll say detoxified, reconstituted, reestablished. The junkus inside of these tamales has been boiled and rendered to a point that it can be consumed by cats and dogs. So please, if you want to feed your family tonight some organic slurry in the shape of a fucking tamale, covered in something that might be corn, it could also be wood chips from the old fucking... from the old pulp mill down the street. Next topic. So, yeah, I've said some things about Tulsi Gabbard in recent podcasts because all of this drama around her, it looks way too serious to be real. All the fucking attacks, all the, you know, you're a Russian agent and Hillary doing her bullshit. Oh, there's a line from... Oh, I think Othello. Yeah, I think there's a line from the play Othello. And it goes something like this, the lady doth protest too much. And of course, if you understand the line in context, it doesn't actually mean what it says. That's a whole nother story. And I don't want to get into deconstructing Shakespeare. In fact, it's a lie, but in the context of the story, the statement is a lie. But in the context of our situation between Hillary and Tulsi Gabbard, the miracle Hawaiian, the miracle Hawaiian surfer woman who seems to be riding in, not on a white horse, but on a surfboard. That's kind of cool. Yeah, it seems fake to me, folks. It seems completely made up. It looks like the World Wrestling Federation. I never got into the World Wrestling Federation. I had some friends a long time ago, when I was still in the army, that really were just so into it. I mean, I think it was their soap opera. It was their thing. They loved it. Fine. So I was forced to watch a few episodes. And of course, everything is contrived bullshit. All of the grudge matches, all of the fucking little fights they have, that's all fucking scripting and improv. none of it is fucking real. Hillary's attacks on Tulsi Gabbard are not real. If you can't tell that they're not real, I don't know what this... You know what, folks? I know it's hard to recognize the possibility that you're being fucked with. I know it is, because if you accept the possibility that you're being fucked with on this monumental of a scale, then where's the limit? Where does it stop? You know, where do you know what the world is if you're being fucked with this much? It's scary. But what I will say definitively is I think the whole Tulsi Gabbard-Hillary grudge match bullshit, that is totally contrived bullshit, people. That has a purpose. Maybe we don't see it yet. Maybe it, in some back-ass, backward way, I don't see how, it gets Hillary into the fucking race and so she can have a chance to win again. That's not even remotely possible, folks. That's not even reality. Hillary knew she couldn't win in 2016. What do you think makes her believe she could win now? I'm not saying she's a good person. She's a total shitbird, but she's not totally fucking stupid. She's a total shitbird. She's a murderess, but she's not a total fucking moron. So I can tell by looking at her face that she's not going to win. The plan is not to have her win. But I'll tell you this much, the whole fight between her and Tulsi looks a lot like Madonna kissing Britney Spears. It's like a fucking ritual. That's how real I think the magical Hawaiian woman is. And I do believe, right now, she is the most likely candidate for the Democratic Party. Not because of polls. The polls are all bullshit, okay? If you plug into the polls, oh my God, I don't know what to tell you. The polls are bullshit. Their entire purpose is to confuse you. They are not a reflection of opinion. If you think polls work, you are very, very fucking confused. So I don't care what the polls say. I don't care what the leading, you know, fucking Zions or Mandarins of the Democratic Party say. Tulsi Gabbard is likely the magical vagina candidate for the Democratic Party in 2020. And if that's the case, I think her magical vagina will ride all the way to the White House. I am convinced of it. You know, she is virtually a stealth candidate. She's just not that... She's not old enough to have done anything that terrible. I think she was in the medical branch... You know, support branch in the Army. So she basically did medical support shit. Great. I'm not saying that's easy. Actually, taking care of wounded soldiers is tough as fuck. But that being said, everything about her career looks careful and selected. Her entire fucking resume looks fucking constructed. And there hasn't been enough time for her to have skeletons. So she's a giant fucking question mark. Just like Obama in 2008. One big question mark. Where the fuck did you come from, magical Hawaiian woman? It looks like she ran for Congress when she was still in fucking college. What the fuck? Okay, who does that? Who fucking decides they want to be a politico when they're in their early 20s other than a scumbag? I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry if you really were into this Tulsi lie. If you think that she's your raven-haired best friend from high school, she's not. She's about as real as Obama. And here's another thing I'll hit you with. You know how Obama, it seems like he's been in hiding for about, I don't know, a year or two now? Like, I barely ever see that guy out saying anything. When he does pop out, it's usually pretty fucking stupid, like his whole defense of Trudeau. That being said, I have another little prediction for you guys. And this prediction has a lot to do with my core prediction, which is Tulsi will be the next president of the United States. Obama is going to come out of hiding. And he is going to, they're going to have some serious fucking meeting. Like, I swear to God, it'll be a publicized event, like something out of the fucking New Testament happening today. And, oh, Obama's going to Hawaii to meet with Tulsi. You know, and it'll probably be either in December or January, but I bet it's before Christmas. Everybody likes a little gifty for Christmas. And if you want to tap into all that money that all the Democrats are going to be giving their little nieces and nephews this Christmas, What better time than to have Obama have a special shuttle diplomacy meeting with Tulsi to talk over the future of the Democratic Party? If I'm right about this prediction, then sometime in the next few months, Obama will meet with Tulsi, and it will be a highly dramatized big event. So at least I've given you gauges about my prediction. Part of my prediction is that Obama will recommend Tulsi Gabbard. Now, some of you will say, doesn't everybody hate Obama? Listen, folks, I studied the Soviet Union in graduate school. Ask me how many old ladies brought out their pictures of Stalin after the wall fell down. Believe it or not, people that are deeply abused by their leadership often still support their leadership. Call it Stockholm Syndrome, call it abused spouse syndrome, I don't care what you want to call it. The fact is, this entire process will do two things. It will rehabilitate Obama, because frankly, a lot of people do hate him, and it will make Tulsi absolutely the front runner. Which means by the spring, she will sweep. She'll sweep every fucking state. I guarantee you, by June or July of next year, I'm pretty certain, let's say I'm 80% now, because all this drama around here is just too ridiculous. It's just too contrived. When stuff is this contrived, it's scripted, it's orchestrated. I think by June of next year, June 2020, all the other competitors will concede, and maybe even as early as May. And I think Tulsi Gabbard will be the presumptive Democratic nominee before the convention. And I think her running mate will either be Andrew Yang or Beto O'Rourke. Now, of course, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think I am. But a really good marker, if you're looking for a decision point or a marker in this particular timeline, I've been in little Saigon too long. My R's and my L's are getting mixed up. Gonna go get some flied lice later on. Oh my god, that was racist, flied lice. I should scumptivate my mouth now. Anyways, yeah, I think Tulsi will get a visit from Obama, and I think it could be right before Christmas. Like, which means in a few weeks. Sometime in December, maybe the middle of December, there'll be this important meeting between Tulsi and Obama. It'll be huge. It could even be as early as Thanksgiving. The key thing is this, folks. They want to tap into all that money that aunts and uncles and moms and dads will be giving their kids this year, so that kids can go online and donate to Tulsi Gabbard 2020. Here's another one too. I need to stop this because, yeah, maybe some more coffee to descompulate. If I am correct, not collect, but correct, in this prediction of mine, I also think it's possible, and this is where it's going to get a bit silly, but if I'm right about this one too, it'll be like a trifecta. A trifecta. Anyways, I think it's possible that if there is a Captain Marvel movie released in 2020, we're talking right around Memorial Day weekend, perhaps Cavern of Chaos. The story of Ant-Man and his trusty followers going into the vagina of Captain Marvel to remove VD, or some kind of crab she got from tripping with Gamora. Yeah, anyways, it's possible, in all seriousness, if there's a Captain Marvel film in the summer of 2020, maybe released for Memorial Day weekend, that they will insert a Tulsi Gabbard cameo. That's a long shot prediction. But like I said, it all looks too fucking fake to be real. All this fucking Tulsi's a Russian agent, everybody fucking Tulsi this. The same kind of crap went on with Obama back in 2008. Oh, Hillary's digging up all the dirt on Obama's radical connections, and oh, is he really a fucking U.S. citizen? Okay, that was all smoke and mirrors bullshit, folks. Total fucking bullshit. Not that most people didn't buy it, but it was bullshit. I'm not saying Obama's a U.S. citizen. I have no idea what he is. He might not even be a real person. Since I've not actually met the guy, he could very well be a half a dozen different people that look alike, that play the same fucking role. That's about how real he could be. I have no idea. Yeah, Captain Marvel 2020, a cameo with Tulsi Gabbard. Next topic. Norman Borlaug. This is a hard one to talk about because... So there was a show back in the early 2000s called Bullshit on Showtime. And it had Penn and Teller on it. And listen, back then, I was still somewhere between a small government Republican and a Libertarian. I was still on what you would call the Freedom Railroad. I was heading in the right direction. But the final stop was anarchism, and I wasn't even anywhere close to there yet. But I would watch, you know, Bullshit, a Showtime show, thinking I was all smart. You know, they would do little episodes making fun of people that questioned 9/11, questioned the story of 9/11. They would do little shows making fun of people who are concerned about an energy crisis. They would do shows talking about world peace and stuff like that. And they were really kind of, looking back, they were kind of a lot of a neocon dreck, I think. You know, Penn and Teller, they kind of parade themselves as libertarians, but they defend a lot of bullshit. Well, let's get to the one specific topic. The one about the Green Revolution and Norman Borlaug. Here's the deal. Everything they said in the episode of Bullshit about Norman Borlaug was 100% true. It is true. He revolutionized agriculture. He figured out ways to pull more food out of the ground faster than any other agronomist in the history of the world. But you need to listen to what I just fucking said. He figured out how to pull more food out of the ground faster than anyone had ever done before. Now, does that imply that the Earth is an infinite unicorn, cornucopia, whatever, that simply farts out food all the time? Or is it possible that the candle that burns twice as bright only burns half as long, you know? The Green Revolution amounted to figuring out how to take the abundance of the petroleum economy and improve the efficiencies of agriculture, improve the mechanization, improve the use of fertilizers, and even beyond that, to improve the breeding of wheat and corn itself. But the bottom line is this: the net effect was not to magically invent food that wasn't there. The net effect was that he figured out a way to pull more food out of the ground faster. That's it. It was an efficiency. It was a matter of leverage. And leverage is great, but leverage doesn't magically make things appear like topsoil. And the problem with Norman Borlaug's little green revolution is it destroys topsoil at a very incredible rate, actually. Crop yields are not going up, folks. I don't know if you're aware of this, but they're not going up. For all the fucking glyphosate we're pouring on the fucking shit, crop yields have actually started to go down. A little factoid nobody wants to talk about. We have so polluted the water systems in the Midwest with Norman Borlaug's Green Revolution that there's basically a permanent dead zone in the Gulf of Alaska. Giant fucking deoxygenated dead zone, horrible toxic bullshit. Norman Borlaug's Green fucking Revolution. And let's talk about feeding the world. Listen, folks, you're going to think I'm a Club of Rome person here in a second, and I'm not. But I'm opposed to two philosophies. One philosophy says we have a right to pick how many people live. Okay, excuse me, how many people exist on planet Earth. And the other philosophy is we get to pick how many people die. And what I'm going to tell you is I think both philosophies are bullshit. Okay? one of the reasons why I'm an anarchist is I recognized many years ago that the basic flaw of the U.S. economy and the world economy is this belief that eating tomorrow's lunch is wise, that it makes sense. I'm not questioning that you can't have economic growth if you do it. You will. It's inevitable. If you eat tomorrow's resources, you're going to have them today. So you'll have incredible growth. But if you believe that exponential function only goes up, you are retarded. There are consequences. What did Ayn Rand say? You can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Norman Borlaug's Green Revolution that he won a fucking Nobel Prize for might have been one of the most damaging agricultural events in the last 1,000 years. When the little magical fun time of the current economic epic comes to an end and people need to feed their families, they're going to find out that they can't just go back to the three-field system. They're going to find out that they just can't go back to crop rotation. We have so fucked up the soil that there are going to be places in this country where using traditional techniques will be impossible, and that means the soil itself will lay fallow, and oh my God, the dust bowl of the 1930s will hold no candle to what is coming. Let me even be more blunt for those of you global cooling people out there. Ice ages create droughts. Ice ages lock up water. If you're a global cooling person and you don't know this, you need to meditate on the bullshit you believe in, okay? Ice ages lock up water. We have to have lots of fresh water to make Norman Borlaug's magical green revolution work. Guess what there won't be? Lots of excess fucking water. Oh yeah, that's one of the consequences of your Maunder minimum bullshit. There also will be shorter seasons for growing. Oh, that's kind of fucked. I think Norman Borlaug set up the human race for something that's called, you know, overshoot. Okay, Norman Borlaug essentially fucked up the ecosystem. He went into the ecosystem and he tried to convince us that a carrying capacity of 1 equals 100. That's not fucking true. It might be true for 50 years, but not for 5,000. Norman Borlaug, the great hero, the deep state agronomist, the person who said food is a right. Folks, here's the deal. Everybody needs food. Everybody needs water. Everyone needs shelter. But the reason why I don't call those rights is because those are things we have to struggle for. Now, we can be willing to be charitable, which is a good thing, and we can give a shit about our neighbors, which is an awesome thing. Actually, it's smart to give a shit about your neighbors. But this idea that everybody has a right to a bowl of food is a bit of a problem for me, because it means basically that there is no limit to the number of people you think you can have on planet Earth. It also implies that somebody like fucking Norman Borlaug, probably believes you can have a billion fucking Bengal tigers in India. You can't, actually. You probably never could. You can't have a billion people in Texas. I don't care if you say you could stack people on top of each other. That's not the fucking point. We are an apex predator. We are not one of them. We are the apex predator. We eat the planet. Like, we just don't eat food. We tear up the earth. We eat everything. We're so fucking smart, we can find grimy old gumbus that's been sitting in the earth for millions of years and convert it into 100 years of some of the greatest advances in human technology. We did that. We are the apex predator on planet Earth. We're not a soft fuzzy. We're not a nice little nicey. Sooner we give up on that bullshit, the more likely we'll have a chance to survive. We are the apex predator on planet Earth. We eat the planet. Norman Borlaug gave a Bengal tiger the ability to he basically gave a Bengal tiger a machine gun. If you want a good comparison, that's what Norman Borlaug did. He basically gave Bengal tigers the ability to make machine guns. Now, and know how to use them. Now, if you think that's a good thing, Maybe when the Cat Empire rules, you'll be one of the lower level mendicants, but the point is this, that's what he did. He gave Bengal tigers the ability to build machine guns and use them. That was his green revolution. Next topic. Last topic. And it's kind of an angry topic too, but it deals with these types of situations I've talked about in the past where we don't necessarily know what the truth is, but we do know we're being lied to. For example, I'll bring this one up. The Trump administration, like the Obama administration and the Bush administration before Obama, has said two things that don't make sense together. One is, there's never, ever, ever been more Arctic ice. Ever. And all the modern minimum people, they love to tell us there's never been more Arctic ice. The other thing the Trump administration has said is that the Arctic Ocean is open for business. It's fully navigable. Lots of territories can be cut up and sold. Folks, these two statements don't fucking work. If the Arctic Ocean is full of ice, it is not navigable. I'm so sorry if that's fucking confusing. If the Arctic Ocean has never had more ice, you're not going to be building fucking contraptions to mine the Arctic Ocean, to drill into it. Maybe drill for oil, but how the fuck are you going to move the oil? Pipelines over the Arctic Ocean? A shifting sea, basically. These things don't make sense together. Here's the other things we'll talk about right now that don't make sense together. We're constantly told America is the new Saudi Arabia. We're a net exporter. Ignore the fact that our fracking oil has 15% less energy than a conventional barrel of oil and costs about 200% more to produce. No, excuse me, 500%. Ignore all the basic realities of how completely debt-laden all of these fucking shale fracking companies are. Ignore all that. We are told we are the new Saudi Arabia. Then why the fuck do we need to keep military forces surrounding oil rigs in Syria? You know what? Trump said he pulled out the troops, except for the troops that are basically guarding the oil rigs, just like Libya. People, Europeans and Americans couldn't give a rat's ass about Libya. They just want the fucking oil, and that's what they have. Same thing in Syria. The problem is, if we're the new Saudi Arabia, why the fuck do we need to do that kind of imperial bullshit? Trump said he was against all these wars and shit, but we gotta hold on to the oil, the greasiest part of the enterprise, the most obvious form of piracy, showing that we are in fact pirates, which is funny, because I believe one of our first great military campaigns, and once our country was formed, was against Libyan pirates. In the early 19th century. Yeah. We're the pirates, folks. Are we the new Saudi Arabia? If we are, then why the fuck do we have to guard these oil rigs in Syria? Why the fuck do we care? If we're the new Saudi Arabia, why can't we pull every fucking troop home from the Middle East and the Gulf? These are the questions we need to answer, folks. I think the whole new Saudi Arabia thing was bullshit from the beginning. Anybody that understood what unconventional oil was, or sometimes called marginal oil, knew the whole fucking story of shale was bullshit. It was oversold crap. But again, denial, anger, and bargaining. I gotta say, you know, there have been these studies about people that live either close to physically or close to, in terms of the timeline, horrible catastrophes. And the closer they get to them, despite the fact that experts might say, you got to get out, you got to leave, you got to get out of here, the closer they get, the more they deny, the more they pretend. And all I'm seeing right now in the media is layer upon layer of denial, anger, bargaining, denial, anger, bargaining. And frankly, the oil thing is a great example. What if the basic truth of oil was the following at this point? With roughly 7 billion people on planet Earth, the price for the current value of the dollar, because again, the value of the dollar changes over time, the price for the current value of the dollar that the world could probably afford for a barrel of oil is probably around $15 to $20 a barrel. Probably. And that probably only works as long as we stay about 8 billion people. And even then, it's not all 8 billion living like Americans. That's $15 a barrel. The price that shale and marginal oil can produce at and make anything that one would call break even, let alone a profit, is closer to $90 a barrel. Do you understand that in classical economics, that means there is literally no clearing price? There isn't. It's like saying, wouldn't it be great to travel to the moon? Wouldn't it be great to have a holiday travel company that takes people to the moon? How much would you pay for that? Well, it's probably what you can afford. So maybe you'd pay what you would pay to go to fucking Disneyland. So family of four to Disneyland. Let's call that $3,000 to $4,000, okay? Maybe more. And you'll say, you know what, Moon Man? I'll pay you $5,000 to take my family to the moon. But what Moon Man tells you is that, yes, he can take you to the moon, your family. It's going to cost you $50 million. And oh, by the way, he's going to need at least 1,000 families to sign up. That's a few more zeros past $5,000. $50 million. The point is, folks, it might be true that you would love to go to the moon and take your family to the moon. But there is currently no fucking clearing price for that. I'm so fucking sorry you don't realize that. I know you would love to have the world economy function correctly with oil today, but the reality is this. The current price of oil needs to be around 90 bucks a barrel. And that's just to break even, folks. That's not making a huge profit. That is not. That is just breaking even. And that's basically canceling all exploration, which means future discoveries, which I'm not sure there aren't that many left, but future discoveries are not going to happen. And like I said, the world wants to pay $15, at most $20 a barrel. That's what the planet Earth would like to pay. That's what all the people in China and India who want to live like Americans, have the air conditioning, have the refrigerator, have the reliable 24/7 electricity. Excuse me, I guess that's not true in California any longer. But yeah, other than California, lots of people want to have, you know, on-demand 24/7 electricity. All these things might be possible at a certain price of energy. But the problem is, and maybe this is more to the point, the cost of energy right now is way above what people want to pay for it. And that's been a radical shift. That is one of the results. When people say, isn't it great that we have this huge middle class now in India and China? Yeah, it's great. But the effect of that, the real outcome of that, is that our consumption of resources, the demand for resources, is radically different than what it was 40 years ago. In fact, you can't even compare the two worlds. The worlds are very different. Anyways, last but not least, I don't know if I'm really happy about tonight's podcast. I think it was okay. Frankly, I think it was kind of crappy. But sometimes my podcasts are good. And if you enjoy my podcast, or, you know, if you enjoy my podcast and you have money, and you have money to burn, which means nobody needs your help, nobody you know, no friends, no family, you literally have some extra money, there is a Venmo link on my homepage on SoundCloud, and there's also going to be a Venmo link in the description area of this podcast on SoundCloud. And you can go there and you can donate whatever you can afford. And it's not a permanent thing. It's not, you know, every month. You just, whenever you feel like you want to pay me money for any value you get out of this, just send me some money. That's fine. I'm not too proud to take money for doing this if people feel like they get value for it. Anywho, I hope you guys have I hope you have a great rest of your evening on this Monday, which is now, you know, closer to 18:30 hours, almost, right? And I will talk to you guys later.